Hi, I'm Chelsea Handler. Welcome to Life Will Be the Death of Me, a production of iHeartRadio.
Thank you, Dallas. That's a very, very warm welcome. I know it's going to be one of those nights. Because it always is in Dallas. It's always one of those nights, and that's why I always come back here when I go on tour. I haven't been on tour in a really long time, and I didn't feel like standing up while I was doing it, so... And I didn't want to go on tour until I had something to say. And so this is me with something to say. I wrote a new book, it's called Life Will Be the Death of Me, and I'm going to read the first chapter of the book to set the tone for everybody about where I was in my life when I wrote this. The book is dedicated to my future husband. Whoever he is, if you're here, if you're a straight man here tonight, by yourself, there are no straight men here by themselves. No fucking way. And if they are, they're 70. The chapter's called Where Have I Been All My Life? I don't remember the actor and I don't remember the movie, but I remember it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon and I had just taken a couple hits off of my vape pen. I needed to load my Pix account, which held pre-released movies that I was expected to screen before a star of one of the movies was a guest on my Netflix talk show. I was sitting on one of my overpriced chaise lounges, the kind that celebrities and Russians purchase for their bedrooms, when I found myself once again unable to convert the TV that descends from the ceiling from Apple TV to Pix. Rich people have descending smart televisions. The idea is that they descend silently and gracefully from the ceiling, but because I am nouveau riche rich, mine sounds more like a helicopter's fucking landing. I'd like to blame my inability to change the mode of my television to Pix on the fact that I was stoned, but that would be a lie. I'd be even less capable if I were sober. I called my assistant Brandon at his house to tell him to tell my other assistant, Tanner, who was downstairs in my house, to come upstairs and help me with the television. I hung up the phone, I looked down at the table and saw the vape pen. How many more hits of marijuana am I gonna need to take to get through this movie? I knew things had hit a new low, or high, depending on how you looked at the situation. I picked up the iPad that controls the TV along with everything else in my house, from the window shades to the exterior lights in my backyard to my pulse, probably, and tried to pretend that I was troubleshooting so that Tanner would think I had at least tried to figure it out on my own, as if that had ever happened before. How did I become so useless? And how many assistants did I actually have? The answer is 2, Brandon and Tanner. Brandon is gay and has an incredible attention to detail. Tanner is straight, and before he met me, he thought the Four Seasons was a weather pattern. Before I met Tanner, I thought Venmo was an online liquor store. I didn't want to watch another stupid movie that I didn't care about, and I really didn't want to interview another action star bloviating about his motivation for playing a half-man, half-mermaid. I didn't care, and I wasn't doing anyone any favors by pretending that I did. Did I ever care? The answer is yes. There was a time when all of this mattered to me. There was a time when being famous and having this kind of success and money and having a TV show was what drove me to want more and more and more, and now I found myself exhausted and ashamed by the meaninglessness of it all. I remember coming home a couple of weeks before the 2016 election on a windy fall night, which for Los Angeles is rare. Anytime there's weather in Los Angeles, even rain, it's exciting. The constant sunshine can start to grate on your nerves. I went up to my bedroom, I opened up my sliding glass doors, I grab my vape pen and I turned on some Neil Young and I lay on my bed in the dark watching the wind blow, my bedroom drapes around, hearing the ruffling of the leaves and watching the lanterns that hang from my backyard trees swinging into each other, thinking, if there's an electrical fire, I hope the dogs will at least bark to wake me up. But overall, my thought was, this is fucking awesome. This is exactly what I hoped adulthood would be like. No kids, no husband, no responsibilities. Just a TV show on Netflix and whatever else I felt like doing whenever I felt like doing it. Not trapped, not stuck, not dependent on a single person but myself. Free to be you and me. I couldn't believe how lucky my life had turned out, how many of my dreams had come true, and also my good fortune in being alive during this time in history, the year we were going to elect our first female president. That didn't happen. I suppose I could blame my state of mind on the election of Donald Trump, so I will. I have the Trump family and their horrifying personalities and those disgusting veneers to thank for my midlife crisis. Along with more than half the population of the world, I couldn't grasp how in this day and age we elected a man who insulted everybody he's insulted and done everything he's done since. The contrast in decency between Barack Obama and Donald Trump was too much for me to bear. It was like electing Snooki to the Senate. Now people were seriously talking about Dwayne The Rock Johnson for president. How on earth did we get there? Although, if I'm being honest, at that point, I would have taken an actual rock. I kept hearing the word elitists, you know, like that everyone in California, New York lives in a bubble, that the election of this lunatic was a result of all of us not knowing anything about the rest of the country. And that didn't ring true for me because I had traveled all over the country doing stand-up for so many years. I'd been to every major city and some minor cities multiple times. I wasn't an elitist. My father was a used car dealer. I didn't have a trust fund or wealthy parents. We weren't even allowed to answer the phone growing up because more often than not, it would be a bill collector. I had $400 when I drove across the country alone to move to Los Angeles and then was broke for 7 years living paycheck to paycheck while simultaneously getting fired from every waitressing job I ever had. I worked for everything I ever have and never even went to college. How could I be an elitist without ever going to college? And then, oh, wait a minute, I remember. I grew up wanting to get as far away from my life and my parents as possible. I had created a life in which there was a zero tolerance policy for any discomfort. I could handle physical discomfort like dental work or elective surgery to make my thighs smaller, but not any discomfort related to not having money. Sure, I was just scraping by on those cross-country trips in the beginning of my stand-up career, barely making enough money from small comedy clubs to cover my hotel room for the week. But after a few years, I was making more money, and then the clubs turned into theaters, and then arenas, and then private planes and chauffeured cars, and sometimes I'd be in a city for less than 24 hours, and then on to the next city. So here I was again, not taking into account the optics, or for that matter, the reality of my own entitlement. I had become exactly what I'd always wanted to be, an elitist. I did live in a bubble, inside a bigger bubble, which was inside an even bigger bubble. That's three bubbles. Two assistants, two cleaning ladies who were basically more like my nannies. A driver, a pool guy, a landscaper, a florist, because I need flowers all the time. A houseman, what's a houseman, you ask? Someone who walks the dog and polishes the outdoor furniture. And oh, who's somebody who cleans up the dog shit? Because can't do that either. Basically, he's an outdoor butler. When was the last time I cleaned up dog shit? Probably the last time I flew coach. I hated having these thoughts. I hated it because in the process, something clicked for me, and I realized that I'd made a career of overhydrating people with honesty, yet I was being dishonest with myself. And now that I was aware of this situation, I would have to do something about it because I couldn't just carry on the way I'd been carrying on, just coasting and cashing checks for essentially being a loudmouth. So I took another hit of my vape. What I really wanted to do was watch the news, even though the news was giving me diarrhea. The whole administration was giving me diarrhea. And probably herpes, too, for all I know. My outrage was high. I'd spent the year after the election being sucked into the vortex of news cycles that accompanied Donald Trump's ascendancy and my subsequent mental hernia. The news was like a high-speed merry-go-round that never slowed down long enough to figure out when it was safe to hop on or off. So like everything else in my life thus far, I hopped on and I stayed on. I had spent the better part of my day in a wormhole, Googling pictures of young Robert Mueller. Because I was developing strong sexual feelings toward him, as well as his investigation. In an interesting plot twist, it turns out Bob Mueller is even hotter in his early 70s than he was when he was in the Marines. I was more attracted to present-day Bob Mueller than I would have had I been alive during Nam. The guy fucking kills me. I mean, who is hotter than Bob Mueller? Daniel Day-Lewis playing Bob Mueller, maybe. I mean, potentially, but he's going to have to stop with his shoe cobbling to film another movie. Daniel Day-Lewis and his shoe cobbling. It's like, no one's talking about your shoes, buddy, okay? Just fucking act. Bob Mueller was the only hope I had that Donald Trump and that terrible vampire family he spawned would end up in prison. The investigation into Donald Trump and his conspiring with Russia and all the other crimes I'm sure he'll be indicted for. Made me realize what real men look like. They look like Bob Mueller, a 74-year-old with a six-pack, possibly an eight-pack, underneath his shirt when he walks. You can see it. He's ripped. Keeping your shit together is what that's called, everybody. A prosecutor, a Marine, and the director of the FBI. How on earth is any woman worth her salt meant to control herself around him and not sit directly on his face? Very few 70-year-old men have a head of hair like that, and if anyone knows their way around 70-year-old men, it's me. They're my core demographic. The thickness, the salt and pepper, it's one thing after another with that patriot. My best friend Mary and I have spent many a night deliberating about what he drinks when he gets home after a long day. Was it a scotch on the rocks or a scotch neat? One ice cube, Mary would say, and it would be a Macallan. People who use one ice cube usually annoy me, but this was different. I knew that Bob Mueller knew better than I did, and if he wanted to use one ice cube, then he was trying to accomplish something different with his libation. I'd be willing to switch over to scotch or whiskey or even use one ice cube for the rest of my life if the reward meant seeing Donald Trump dragged out of the White House topless, handcuffed. While his hairpiece detached from the tape on his head and then flew around like a cyclone landing in the Rose Garden. I'm not embarrassed by my feelings about Robert Mueller or for Robert Mueller. I'm surprised, maybe, but I'm not embarrassed. I am legitimately attracted to him and everything he stands for. I respect the shit out of him, and I suspect there will be a lot of people naming their baby boys Bob after this whole shit show is over. Who would have thought Bob would finally take off? Imagining Bobby, sitting in his boxers and a little boy's Hane undershirt with short sleeves while drinking a Macallan on the rock, probably in a leather club chair. Made me feel like Bob Mueller and I had a lot more in common than anyone would have guessed, even me. I imagined us playing Clue together, deep in the Catskills. Learning entirely new strategies to a game I thought I had already intellectually mastered. I understand Bob Mueller is married and unavailable, so I would like to go on the record and say I respect that, while also remaining deeply attracted to him. It wouldn't matter if he was interested in me or not. I don't need people to like me in order for me to like them. That's a new thing I'm toying with, and I like it. It's fun. through the months of thick fog and despair after the election, he was the one bright spot. He also represented a seminal moment for me personally. I had finally found the first Republican I could see myself being penetrated by. Back to my midlife crisis. There's a line I'd written down from Viktor Frankl's memoir, It's about surviving the Holocaust. It's called Man's Search for Meaning. It was a line that stopped me cold when I read it. It said, it did not really matter what we expected from life, but rather what life expected from us. I had never thought about what life expected from me. I had only thought about what I expected from life. That was a book putter downer. It was a look up at the sky and wonder, where the fuck have I been all my life moment. How lost was I if that question had never occurred to me, and it hadn't ever occurred to me? I had to read it to think it. What a fucking dummy I was, rewarding myself over and over again with homes and cars and vacations and gross extravagance. I justified all of it because I worked for everything I had. I came from nothing, I told myself. For years, that was my story. Work hard, fight hard, don't give up. You can do anything. You deserve this. The idea that I came from nothing is a joke. My parents were disappointing, like, with their personalities, but... I always felt loved by lots of people. I never went hungry. I never struggled. I was white, pretty, Jewish, and had a ton of misplaced self-confidence. So life got easier the more focused I became. I got to Hollywood, and I was rewarded for all of that behavior. My life was a bubble. That's exactly what it had become, a big, vapid bubble. And what were my ties to being famous? What were my ties to being a celebrity? Wealth and fame existed as a couple in my mind. They went together. Did that mean I could still have one without the other? And if so, which one would I choose? And is this my whole identity? Is this my whole life? It can't be. Do I get to fall in love again with a man? No, a man can't help you with this. You got yourself here. So the question is, what are you going to do with yourself now? What is my enough? I never had to care about the state of the world before. The world was a vague thought and a whimsical fancy. That was for the adults. I thought that by traveling to so many different countries, I was doing my due diligence, that by edifying myself with other cultures and sharing my experiences on camera, on my show, I was somehow making a worthy contribution to society. America wasn't a problem. There was no problem. We had elected a black president, and we were about to elect a woman. Racism and feminism were fights. Again, it didn't happen, sweetie. Maybe we're not talking about the same thing. Racism and feminism were fights we had already won. America was being handled by people smarter and more skilled in politics, and they took care of this stuff so that people like me could live the American dream and remain blissfully ill-informed. I had spent my adulthood on a cigarette boat going 100 miles per hour, and now I felt like I had somehow become marooned on one of those terrible all-inclusive Carnival cruise ships. Time speeds up as it goes by. Someone explained to me that there is a mathematical reason for this. As you age, each year becomes a smaller percentage of the life you have already lived. I'm 42 as I write this. So 1 year now represents a small percentage of my 42 years, about 2.38%. But when I was 8, 1 year was a really long time. It was an eighth of my life. And this is why summer lasted for about 4 years when you were a kid. And this may be why I now feel an urgency to know more, to do more, and to be more. Don't get me wrong, I don't believe life is too short. I believe life is too long. It's exhausting. I don't fear dying. I want people to know that if I die early, it's not some tragedy. If I die tonight, it's not. I'd be relieved. I'm wiped out. And I've had a great adventure. I have $250,000 set aside for my funeral because I want everyone to have one big fucking party in my honor. I want to have a great funeral filled with dancing and little people and mushrooms. And then little people on mushrooms. I want it to be a celebration for all the people who love me and for all the people who are happy to see me go. But in the meantime, between now and then, this is my attempt at taking stock of how I got here, where I've been, and where exactly it is that I'm going. What exactly is it that I might bring to the table to answer the question that Viktor Frankl forced me to ask myself? Do I have the conviction to examine myself unflinchingly to reveal the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful? The answer is yes. I have a lot to be embarrassed about, and I intend to advertise it. I'm sick of my voice, of my ambition, of my entitlement. I'm sick of not knowing more, and I'm embarrassed it took me this long to figure it out. Life has been too easy. I've gotten almost everything I've ever wanted, and I'm 42. Something smells fishy. After all is said and done, I'd like to be cremated and have my ashes scattered over Bob Mueller's grave. Or inside it. Or his inside mine. Or inside of me. Or in one of Daniel Day-Lewis's clogs. Thank you. Thanks, guys!
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I'm gonna bring out somebody that you're all gonna love very much. And she's a very good friend of mine, and she was nice enough to fly out here to interview me for tonight. And you might know her. Please welcome Connie Britton. Okay.
Hi. Hi, Dallas. Yeah, good.
Let's tell everybody how we met.
Okay.
Was it on my TV show?
We met, no, you thought we met on your TV show. We did not meet on your TV show. We met in an airport. You accosted me. You were dating Ted Harbert. Remember Ted Harbert from previous books?
That was one of my first older boyfriends. That was when 20 years between my age and their age was acceptable.
Right.
When I was in my 20s and 30s, I'd date 50-year-olds. Now that I'm 44, I'm not dating a fucking 64-year-old. You know what I mean? So the margin has to, like, shrink. So, I mean, I'm open-minded, and that's why I'm single. So, yes, I'm
It's working out great for you.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
working
you
wonderfully.
Thank you.
No, but you were a fan of Friday Night Lights. I know. I'm so happy to be back in Texas. I love y'all. And you accosted me in the airport, and somehow we ended up with each other's numbers. And I don't know if you remember this, and I wanted to start by saying I'm so fucking proud of you. This book is number one on, like, two different New York Times bestseller lists.
I know.
I'm so proud of you because this book is like nothing else you've ever done. It's nothing else you've ever written. And it is a reflection of who you've become. And I say that because we're talking about when we met. Because when we met, this is Chelsea's like,
yeah,
bless your heart.
I was out of control.
And then we like texted each other, and then you invited me to some birthday party that you were having on some island in like a club where it's like going to be a club like 24 hours a day. And I was in the middle of working on something, I don't know what, and I couldn't go, and you were so mad at me.
Was I?
So mad
yeah,
at me.
Yeah, I used to be really pissed all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, she was so pissed. She was
like
so
24/7 anger, like just fucking agitation.
Yeah, but also like somehow that I couldn't go, it was like I was abandoning her. You don't do that anymore.
No.
Now you're so healthy.
I'm a lot healthier than I was.
Yeah.
But you don't realize when you're in those states, when you're just kind of going and you're just like, you know, my career, when it started in this town, you just go a million miles per hour, you know, you
yes.
never can take a break either. And it
right.
becomes an addiction. And then all of a sudden you're just out of, you're not even paying attention to what's happening and your life just kind of passes you by. So it was good to have a wake up call because when I hear stories like this, I cringe. I'm like, oh God, I was so fucking annoying.
No, but you weren't. You were still, you always have had this heart, but now you're letting us really see it and you're letting yourself really see it, and I'm really proud of you. And I'd like to thank Dan for that.
Dan's my psychiatrist.
I have really irrational feelings for Dan. I really want Dan badly. Like, you want Robert Mueller, I want Dan.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
It's comparable.
Dan was the first psychiatrist that I ever went to that I wasn't attracted to, and that's why I stuck with it. Because I knew that if it's a sexual thing, and with girls, we're so screwed up, you know? A dentist can be borderline good looking. And all of a sudden, you're like, ugh, you know? Just because he has some control over you. Have you ever, like, anytime I've been put under by an anesthesiologist, you're just like, oh my God, like, you're immediately attracted to them. Just because they're like, they have your life in your hands, you know, in their hands.
I know, that's yeah. So sexy.
So, yeah.
I love being drugged. What? What's happening?
Connie doesn't like drugs, just so you know.
Yeah.
I gave her a hit of weed. I'm into cannabis now.
Yeah, she's into cannabis now.
It's not legal here, right? Okay, it will be. It will be at some point.
Yeah,
it will be. It's going to be legal everywhere. But I'm coming out with my own cannabis line at the end of the summer, and because it's helped me. It's helped me so much, especially with, like, you know, just relaxing, calming, slowing down. Cannabis was my gateway drug to, like, meditation and all that shit.
Because that's how that goes. You always start with drugs before you meditate. Healthy.
First, I have to calm down for long enough to meditate. So, yeah, I need some weed. We were over at our friend Charlize Theron's house one night. And so we're there, and I had my weed pen, a sample of my weed pen. I said, Connie, here, try it. And she's like, oh, I never really smoke. I was like, then don't. I don't want the drama. You know what I mean? If you're going to, like, I was like, then please.
Wait, also, it was a dinner party where all these people were supposed to show up, and like, we were the only two people who came. So it ended up being, and it was like this beautiful dinner party for like three women.
Well, three of us.
Two of whom were real stoned.
I was stoned, but I'm always a little bit stoned. So you were stoned. And then we moved in the living room and some other people came over. So it was Rita Ora, the musician, and Cara Delevingne came over. So she's on the couch lying behind me and I'm talking, chit-chatting, and I don't even notice. And I just went to go sit back. I'm like, who's that? They're like, Connie, she's been sleeping for like 2 hours. And then 3 weeks later, I get a text from Cara Delevingne saying, hey, I'm having a party at my house, a housewarming or whatever.
It was her birthday.
I thought it was too. I got there. It was a housewarming party. I'm like, why the fuck did I go to this? I was like, I thought this was an important night. I mean, so she said, hey, I'm having a housewarming party. Will you invite Connie and Charlize? And I was like, Yeah, I will. And then I invited you, and you're like, oh, that's so sweet. I don't even know Cara Delevingne. And I was like, well, she met you the other night while you were asleep on the couch.
And I must have made a great impression because she invited me to her not birthday party. So
that's
whatever,
true.
I'm a great sleeper.
If you can make a good impression while you're sleeping, I think that's solid.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You used to be more of a sleeper, too. That was another thing. 2 years ago at your birthday party, you basically announced to everybody who was still at your birthday party, okay, guys, I'm going to bed.
You know what?
It was as awkward as that sounds. Like, it was not any less awkward than that. It was literally like I looked at Brandon, I'm like, okay, should we go? We're going to go. I'm going to go.
That's, I like to do a French exit, but it's hard to do that at your own house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard to just.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so, but now here you are, you're in Texas.
I'm in Texas, which.
Yeah. The other thing about Chelsea is she's had a crush on. Well, you've had a crush on a couple of my TV husbands.
The reason I'm friends with Connie is because she works with men that I would like to get penetrated by. Kyle Chandler, obviously, is ridiculous. And obviously, I had a huge crush on him. And then he did the other show after you. And then I was like, oh, my God. Like, I have a real obsession with him. So I had to stop watching him because it was unhealthy because he's married and doesn't want anything to do with me. I've tried to get him on my show to interview him on my old show, and Connie would try and be our liaison, but then, you know, he'd
and
be
he's like,
no,
not going to do it, no.
He's like,
no,
that
that's real sweet. She could come out. You offered to, like, go meet him, like, in a teepee or something, which...
He said, he goes, can she come down and do the interview? And where does he live? In Austin?
Yeah.
In Austin. And I was like, yeah, I'll go to Austin. We could do it in the woods.
Yeah.
And he's like, tell that crazy bitch I don't want her to interview me. And then she worked with Eric Bana, because, and that's another one of mine. Although, did you guys all see Dirty John? How many people? Although in Dirty John, I wasn't as into him as I've been into
other
projects.
Yeah, well, it's hard to get into a sociopath.
Yeah. Well, you did. Good job.
Yeah, well, I'm an actress. It's called acting. Yes, yes.
Okay, well, this sounds like a good time to take a break.
Tell the story about Chunk on the plane.
Oh, well, Chunk was my old dog. Yeah, Chunk was, he was such a stud.
Y'all are going to cry in the book, too, by the way, just saying.
Chunk was great. Chunk was like my family dog. He was my first dog. He made me a mother. And I wasn't a great mother, which is why I'm glad I didn't ever have children, because, you know, that would be a disaster. And so I think I also am like, people should thank me for that too. Like, I don't get enough recognition, I feel like, you know, not contributing to, like, putting out another one of me, I think is a responsible decision making. But Chunk and I was a really good mom until I took Chunk to Mallorca. I brought him to Spain because I thought he would deserve a trip overseas. And when I had never taken him on an international flight, so it was like 12 or 14 hours totally with a layover in Germany, and we were going to see my family. And my family and I, we all get along, but we're a little bit like, my brother's married to this Russian, and she's kind of a buzzkill, and she's very Russian, you know, like she's very overprotective, she's superstitious, it's all like, she thinks everyone who's gay has been molested. It's like, it's hard to deal with her, you know? She's always like, Chelsea, when do you get the boyfriends? And I'm like, Have you been listening to anything I've ever said? That is not going to complete me. And so she has three boys with my brother, and they're all horrified by her as well, because she's one of those women who's like a mosquito, you know? Like, did you watch? Like, they get out of the pool, and then she makes them put on dry pool clothes. And then when they get back in the pool, they have to put the wet ones back on. I'm like, just skip the pool. Skip it. It's a nightmare for all of us to watch this. I mean, she's so materialistic. Like, she's always about my money and the things and where my, oh, this is a nice house you rented. Are you thinking about buying it? It's like, no one's talking about that. And you know, she thinks the only key to happiness is to be married, to have children. She still thinks there's a chance I'm going to have a child. I'm like, I'm 44. It's a wrap. She's like, Chelsea, you are very fertile. I can tell. I'm like, but so I was going on vacation with them. And on the flight out, Chunk and I flew Iberian Air or something, and I got the sleeping pills for him because I had never taken him on a flight, and I wanted to make sure he didn't pee or anything, so I was like, okay, I'll probably knock him out. And then in some, like, twist of fate, I just said, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to give him a sleeping pill. He's never taken one. It was the most responsible parenting I'd ever...
Very impressive.
For me to take an overnight...
inspiring.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For me to take an overnight flight without... taking a sleeping pill, that's saying I love you. You know what I mean? Like, I had never done that. I'd never taken a flight without taking a sleeping pill that was that long. But I stayed up with him and whatever. So I got there and I was like, you guys, I did it. I nailed it. Like, I'm an A number one parent. And then halfway through the trip, my brothers and sisters are all there. I was really annoyed with my Russian sister-in-law. We were on a sailboat and I was taking the boys into these coves to swim and these caves that were underwater. And she was just like, you can't go with Chelsea. It's not safe. And finally, I just swam home like Julia Roberts in Sleeping with the Enemy. I was like, literally, we were on a boat sailing in beautiful Mar- and I was like, I'm just going to swim back to the house. She is so fucking annoying. And you know what's so funny about her? She's so annoying, but she doesn't, even if you tell her she's annoying, she's like, ooh. Like, she doesn't hold a grudge about it. She'll just pick up the conversation where she goes, yes, anyway, Chelsea, that's not nice. What were you saying? And I'm like, huh. So I swam to shore, and my aunt, who's awesome, she's a real bitch. So, like, we have a good rapport, and she doesn't say much. I walked in. I was like, can you believe them? Like, they put so much sunblock on their sons. Like, you couldn't even see them, you know? And I walked in. I go, can you believe fucking Olga? And then my brother, Glenn, they bicker about everything, you know? Like, she could see a can opener, and it's a thing. And you're like, oh, my God, everything's a safety hazard. So... I said, I go, can you believe how they act? I mean, what's up with that sunblock? And my aunt's like, I can't believe she doesn't even put it in their mouths. I mean, and I looked at Chunk's meds, and what I discovered was that they were doggy Xanax, basically the equivalent to a human Xanax. And I was like, game changer. And I popped one, split it in half because it hits you faster. And I was like, listen, I'm going to go knock myself the fuck out because it was a Thursday. We had till Saturday. And I was like, I was at the end of my rope. And so I basically slept for the next 2 days. And I just wake up in the morning, go downstairs, take a half a Xanax, pop it in, go back upstairs. I'm like, I can't deal with any more Russian accents. Anytime they ask me, I'm like, I just can't. So we get on the plane on the way back from Mallorca. And I popped the last Xanax. Chunk had five, and I was on my fifth one. I popped it and realized I didn't have any for Chunk. And I was like, oh, fuck, I can't throw up a Xanax on a plane. And I'm like, oh, duh, that was so not thinking.
I like that was a thought, though.
I was like, oh, what do I do? I mean, what do you do if you take something you're not supposed to? Of course, that's the first thought. And I go, for me, anyway. And so
it isn't.
So I pass out, and I wrap Chunk's leash around my waist, and I'm just hoping he's going to pass out, too. And then I was falling asleep, and I was like, I had one of these baby sleeping pills that I brought but never used because I had, you know, pilfered my own son's. And so I gave him a Sonata, which is like a light four-hour sleeping pill. And we both fall asleep. We wake up. 4 hours later, the woman is like pulling me by my hair, the flight attendant. She's like, your dog is running around the first class cabin and foaming at the mouth. And I am literally like, you should have, I mean, there's dog hair everywhere. And I had a leash around my belly and I was so out of it, you know? I was trying to, I'm like, oh, Chunk, I'm like, Chunk. And I could hear him. He sounded like a werewolf. He was like, and I was like, oh my God, this is going to be a nightmare. Oh my God. Oh my God. And so I'm running and I get up to go just jump for him to like lurch and the rope burn around my waist from the leash. I was like, ah. And then I'm like, please, miss, help. And the woman's like in her seat. She's like, I'm not a flight attendant. I'm not helping you. I don't work here. I was like, please go get me. And she's like, I'm not. And I was like, oh shit, I'm on my own on this flight. So I get him, and he is just, and my Chunk was cool. Like, he would never be uncool. He never even would let himself get an erection in front of me or go to the bathroom. He was just a gentleman. He would turn around. If I saw him go to the bathroom, he would turn around and run away. I was like, that's what I like. I like that, you know, respect. And so it was hard to see him in that condition, especially knowing that I had done that to him. And then finally, then the flight attendants were, you know, they were like, you're a nightmare. And I was like, listen, can we get us, I'm like, can we get some food? I was like, fuck it, I've just got to give him water. He was so thirsty. You know, the vet said before, you know, if you take your dog on a plane, just remember, the pill makes them very thirsty. And I go, yeah, but you just told me I can't give him water for 14 hours. So then he's going to be thirsty and dying for water? And she's like, you have to choose. Fucking vets. They never give you any real information. Every vet I've ever gone to, they're like, oh, you rescue a dog. And they're like, oh, it could be 4, it could be 12. I'm like, that's a pretty big margin of error. 8 years? So the vet, you know, so he did get thirsty. So I finally just gave him water. I even tried to give him orange juice, anything. And I ordered him a steak. The flight attendant came over and was like, would you like anything for your traveling companion? The steak was for him. And then he finally calmed down, and I was just so scared that I was going to get off the plane, and it was going to be fucking arrested, you know, by PETA, you know, news would have spread. I'm like, that's the shit I need to deal with. Chelsea Handler kills her dog on plane from Mallorca.
Well, your book is so much about death that when I read it, I'm like, I don't remember this story. She killed Chunk on a plane? Like, I was sure that that's how it was going to end. I was so relieved that he survived it.
He did survive. He wasn't really ever the same after that trip, but I mean, I do feel badly that I did something to him. It would just really knocked him out. And I won't take any more dogs to Mallorca. That is not a smart move. You know what I mean? They can't handle it. It's too long and it's not fair, but I don't really know what the point of that story is.
Well, I really like your drug stories. You know, your drug stories are always funny to me. Like, I like the one where you, right? They're so funny. Like, I like the one where you, didn't you take a yeast infection, like, suppository orally?
Yes.
That happened, right?
Yes, I was in Whistler. I was in Whistler, Canada, and I thought I had a situation.
Yeah.
And I called my doctor, and they sent me a pill, and I took it orally, and then, like, like a day later, I was like, I wonder if that was supposed to go in my Pikachu. And then I called my doctor. I was like, hey, quick question. I was like, that pill, that Diflucan or what, you know? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, that goes. And he's like, nothing. I'm like, where does that go? He's like, I'm sorry? I'm like, where does that pill go? He's like, I don't understand the question. I'm like, yeah, you do.
Anyway, so wait, patience. And then I want to talk about politics because that's another huge change.
Oh, we can do that right now. Go ahead.
Okay, but
let's talk about Beto O'Rourke.
Yeah, but let's talk. Yes. I mean, Beto, right here in you're in the seat of it right here. Like,
I know,
this is Beto. This
it's
is Beto country.
For Texas, isn't it?
Because we met a while ago, like in the airport in Friday Night Lights, but this was like in your old days. And then I remember I didn't go to a birthday party you invited me to, which was on some island, and it was like in like a club. You were going to be in a club like 24 hours a day, every day for your birthday. And I was like, I'm working, I can't go. And you almost didn't forgive me.
Yeah, I would get mad at people.
She would get really pissed. Like, if you didn't show up, she was like, you're done. I'm done with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, but thankfully, time passed, and you had your experience.
I calmed down.
But politics kind of brought us back together again, I think.
Yeah, it was nice because after that election, you became friends with people. Not, this is an example of us, but you actually became friends with people that normally you wouldn't talk to. You're like, oh, yeah, we're on the same team here. Let's try and figure this out. And I know that you and I both were, like, scrambling about what to do and hysterical. And I didn't realize, you know, I learned about, like, for me, it was like, I threw myself in, which I know you did too. You just are like, oh my God, what are we gonna do? We gotta get the midterms going. Like, we're gonna go in and fix everything. But luckily it was a collective of so many people that went in and actually campaigned.
I think you realize the way we're dealing now with the way the country is, I think is very representative of who we are as individuals, because in order to change the country, you have to invest yourself. You have to invest yourself financially. You have to invest yourself with your time. You have to invest yourself with your passion. You have to invest yourself with the way you talk to people around you, with your community, with your family. And there are some people who are capable and willing to do that, and there are some people who aren't. And that's an indication of character. So I think that we're seeing that a lot amongst ourselves right now too, you know, and that's how we kind of
Well, you actually, Connie was roommates with Kirsten Gillibrand.
Yes, Kirsten Gillibrand. See, you're not, it's like a smattering, a smattering of applause.
Well, it's
y'all,
Beto,
Kirsten
Beto
is amazing.
Country.
We are very lucky because we have many truly incredible candidates right now and possible
presidential nominees.
I like.
But Kirsten's amazing, y'all.
There are a lot of good candidates, and I mean, like you, I got so burnt out with the midterms that I was like, oh my God, I don't ever want to deal with fucking politics again. I can't stand this shit. But it's necessary. You can't just dip in and out. You have to kind of harness your outrage and make it something positive and go and do something good. So I'm trying to pace myself and not burn out or burn the candle at both ends with this and be active and be aware of everything that's going on politically. So it's like a fun... I'm right here, sweetie. You can see me. Open your ojos.
Where are you?
Abiertas tus ojos.
What drugs is she taking?
Who knows? People get shit-faced when they come see me. Right? We once did a show, like 10 years ago, we did a show, we were in Long Island, and it was a theater that was in the round, and which means like you're in the center of a crowd, so like your ass is facing half the people. It's not a great setup, but it's old school. And we were in this theater in Long Island, and after we were done, the security guard like walked me off the stage because you're surrounded by people, and he was being very protective, and he's like, sorry, there's vomit everywhere. Like every girl there had thrown up. He's like, wow, you really attract quite a crowd. He's like, last time I saw this was ZZ Top. I'm like, yeah.
I'm sure this theater has seen its share of vomit.
Yes, I'm sure it has. Yes. But anyway, I'm optimistic about the future because I think we have to be, and we have to live in a state of hopefulness. And I really wanted to get my head on straight. And the thing that I learned the most is, like, in order to be of use to anyone really in this world, you have to get your shit together and you have to clean out your own injuries. And now
Amen.
We can talk. Amen, sister.
Amen, sister.
Amen.
Speak it.
So,
also, you're living an honest life. You're
living an
honest and true life. You
I'm
are.
I'm clean and sober, and I'm living an honest life. Cheers.
Cheers. I didn't say you were living a sober life.
But I want to read this last part of the book for you guys before you get going, because... Wow. We have these I Decide bracelets and these... necklaces and t-shirts that say I Decide because of something I wrote in the book. Hold on, let me get rid of my camel toe. One second. Don't let other people decide what kind of mood you're going to be in. Don't let anyone change your life in one day. Don't let death take you down and keep you down. You go down, but get back up. If we don't give in to our despair and instead lock it away, we fail to properly mourn the people we love. How on earth are we honoring the very people we are grieving if we fail to mourn them fully? We should be celebrating the people we've lost. I missed 30 years of celebrating my brother. I decide to grow up. I decide to be better. I decide to take my life back. All of the proceeds for the t-shirts and the bracelets go to True Colors United, which is an organization for LGBTQIA youth who are homeless. Thank you so much for the support. I totally appreciate it. And thank you to Connie Britton, my very good friend, for being here tonight. Thank you, guys.
Okay, Brandon, well, that was a live show. So you now, I just want to make an announcement to everybody that I've had 21 shows and you haven't been to one. And LA is the city you dwell in. And you didn't even come to that show. Brandon had plans the night of my show here in LA.
Yes, but my new plan is to come to one of your other shows. Like, I'd really like to go to New Orleans or St. Louis or maybe Nashville.
Well, we need to add, first, I have to, you're not coming to any of those shows. I added new dates where I'm going to be doing stand-up. So that's Westbury, Long Island. I'm coming to Atlanta. I'm coming home to Montclair, New Jersey, St. Louis. Minneapolis, New Orleans, and Nashville. So go to LiveNation.com for tickets to a live show where I will be doing stand-up and Brandon will not be. We'll be back next week with my psychiatrist who's going to break down the Enneagram for everybody who's been asking questions about that.
Bye-bye.
Life Will Be the Death of Me is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.